हरिः ॐ सहनाववतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Bhagavat Sandarbha, Adhyayana 2, Adhikarana 1, description of the form of Bhagavan. Okay, continuing from page 59. Another reason is given in the sutras to show that Maya does not mean transformation. Tad de tu vyapade sach cha. Ananda Maya. Anandamaya does not refer to the jiva because the text says that the Anandamaya Purusha causes bliss for the jiva. Brahma Sutra 1.1.14. The Lord who is abundant in bliss causes bliss for the jiva. Thus Maya means abundant in reference to the Lord, not transformation, which can only be in reference to a jiva. Because the Lord is blissful. The Shruti teaches, Esha Hyevanandayati. The Lord causes bliss to the jiva, Taittiriya Upanishad 2.7. This is like the sun which, because of its abundant light, is able to illuminate everything. The stars with meager light cannot do so. And of course, water and other elements do not have the abundance of light at all. Therefore, in all cases, the quality of abundant bliss indicates Brahman. Brahman gives bliss to all. Hetu vyapade shena, or the cause of bliss, means that the Lord's sarup is abundant in that bliss. The ability of gems endowed with light to give off light occurs because of the light situated in the gem, not because of some portion of earth element. Therefore, he who is bliss alone gives bliss. That is indicated by the word eva. Esha Yevanandayati, he alone gives bliss, Taittiriya Upanishad 2.6. Yes.
When we say Maya means abundant, is it the same meaning when we say Mayapur?
The place of abundance. It can also mean the place of Yoga Maya. That's the general understanding. This is Yoga Maya's place. Because here, means they're talking about in the Ananda Maya Purusha, yes. the word Maya is not meaning illusion.
Yes.
It's meaning abundance. So then Anamaya, there's just an abundance of, you know, eating and engaging the senses. So Ananda Maya means there's abundance of a Maya. I mean, Ananda. Yeah.
Those are two different words. One is long, A, double A, and one is short.
Mm. Yeah. Oh, I see.
Maya. Hmm? One's Maya and one's Maya.
Okay. Mm. So in other words, when it's longer, there's less. And when it's shorter, there's more. So hence the saying, more is less. Less is more, right? So it's a Vedic attribute, a Vedic principle. No? Okay. We see slowly, slowly, everything's in the Vedas. Yeah, because they're just trying to show that he is the source of bliss. It's not the jiva. It's not talking about the jiva. The jiva is not going to produce his own bliss. Otherwise, if he produces his own bliss, why does he need Brahman? Right?
Which bliss they're talking about?
Bliss.
Or what they're talking about?
Or what they're talking about? Well, their idea is that when they come to the platform of Brahman realization, when they become situated in Brahman and are liberated, then they're going to taste the ananda of Brahman. But the point is if Brahman is, the difficulty comes up is that for there to be Ananda and Brahman, then that means then Brahman must have the quality of Ananda. Otherwise, how would you get that? And then that Ananda being applied on an object, then you'd get that experience. So the point is that if they're saying, no, it doesn't, Brahman's just Brahman and there are no qualities, then how will there be Ananda? And if there's no Ananda, then liberation would not be a purusharta, something that people endeavor for. Because people endeavor for things that they become happy from, right? Because the nature of the soul. So, they end up with a lot of problems here because they're trying to define one thing and remove another, and so they just end up with all these difficulties. Does that make sense? Yeah. You know, it's just like let's say you're in a kind of a tight social situation, and so then you tell a small lie, but then the problem is it keeps extending because you just have to keep it going.
Yeah.
So it gets more and more. So that's the Mayavad philosophy. Because of the word tail, pucha, tail, joined with Brahman, the tail of the Purusha must be Brahman. How can the Purusha then be Brahman and filled with bliss? Right? Because we've already established before that Brahman is has these attributes of bliss, but they're trying to say it doesn't have. But then if it's the Anandamaya Purusha, they're going to say is that the tail, because that's connected with Brahman, that means it's only a part of the Anandamaya Purush. It's not the Anandamaya Purush. Right? So then they'll try to say, well, the Jiva is the Anandamaya Purush. But then that doesn't, then how do you get Ananda, and why would it be something you're striving for? You know, so they keep, depending on which question you ask, they give a different answer. And then if you doubt that, they'll give a different one. And then you can just keep going around. You know, that's the problem. So, yeah. The author of the sutras says, Mantar Varnikam Eva Cha Giyate. Anandamaya does not refer to the jiva because the Brahman glorified in the mantra section is the same Anandamaya Purusha. From a sutra 1.1.15. So it's already talking about that right there, the Anandamaya Purusha, right in the first section. So it seems to be a major thing. So that must be why Madhvacharya is taking that, because that's the opening of the Brahma Sutras. Mm-hmm. Brahman is glorified in the mantra Satyam Jnanam Anantam Brahma, Taittiriya Upanishad 2.1, which falls in the same section. Thus, the Anandamaya Purusha is the supreme Brahman, and the Jiva is not the Anandamaya Purusha, with Brahman as the tail. Because otherwise, if you're the Anandamaya Purusha and you have Brahman as the tail, so that means you're the complete and Brahman's just part of that. You know, and they'll go for it. You know, as Mayavadis wanting to be God, they'll accept that. But it doesn't make any sense. Brahma vid apnoti param. The knower of Brahman attains the supreme. This shows that Brahman is to be attained by the jiva. Tad esha bhukta. Turning to Brahman, accepting Brahman, is as explained, abhi, the verses uttered by the sacrificer, upta. Tasmad va e tasmad atmanaha. From Brahman, ether arose. In this statement, the word atma means Brahman, and is designated as Anandamaya, since the section concludes with Brahman. Thus, by the mantras in this section, the Anandamaya Purusha is proved to be the Parabrahman, not the Jiva. This Parabrahman causes realization of special Ananda, since that is the purport of this section. Right? Because this second section, the second part, because we see here it says, 2.7 or 2.1. Right? Then Taittiriya Upanishad, the second part's called the Anandavali. It's about Ananda. What's Ananda? So they're going up through the Ananda that you find in the material world and getting up to Brahman. And then so that's the whole thing it's doing. And so now it's saying that concluding with this is establishing Brahman as the supreme. So it has to be that is the how it's working. And then the next section then is the Bhrigu Vali, then the instruction to Bhrigu. It shows about all the different levels of consciousness, what they are and everything like that. So it goes through it again. So it seems to be a very major, this point of these five levels of consciousness is a very important point in the philosophy. Because Ananda also is the form of knowledge and other qualities, though Brahman is also mixed with infinity and other qualities, that does not change the meaning of Brahman, since those qualities are also Brahman's very form, right? Because if some it's the form of something, then details don't change the form, like we have the column. So then you're going to have bricks, and you're going to have mortar. So because there's a differentiation within the column of bricks and mortar, that doesn't mean now the column's not a column anymore. Right? It's the form of the column. It's made, it has those qualities. So therefore, then Brahman, having these qualities together of ananda and knowledge, you know, eternity, all these things, that's just the form of Brahman. Does that make sense? Yeah. Pragyana gatam evananda mayaha. Brahman is filled with knowledge and bliss. Mundaki Upanishad 5. This indicates Brahman. Because otherwise, knowledge and bliss, who has that except Brahman? Right? So except for the Supreme Lord, then no one has. Because Brahman means Krishna.
Yes.
Right? And then he has the three features of how you understand him, depending upon your approach.
Yes.
Right? So since we're dealing in the field of knowledge, right, and logic,
yes,
you're dealing with the Maya bodies, the highest they can understand of the Lord is Brahman.
Yes.
So therefore the term Brahman is used. Right? But the Brahman effulgence. But it's still, it's Krishna who's the source of, you know, it would be like saying is all they can appreciate is the sunshine.
Yes.
And then they say, there's no sun globe, and there's no sun god.
Yes.
You know, and therefore everything's coming from the sunshine.
Mm-hmm.
Right? From the sunshine, then you get the globe, then you get the deity. Right? It doesn't make any sense, but that's how they think. Because as by knowledge, that's as far as they can get. They can't go any farther.
Now, this makes some sense. There is a concept of everything is one.
Everything is one, yes, but how does sunshine produce the sun planet? And how does that produce the sun god? So everything is one means the sun god, then there's the planet, then there's the sunshine, that's the oneness. When you accept the sun god, then the sunshine is just part of the scene. In a sense. So that's the point, that's the problem with knowledge, is you can only understand up to the Brahman level. That's why this idea is that, oh, we're intelligent, and so therefore we can understand everything in the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. It has nothing to do with it. That's like saying, because I have a car, I make a great lassi. You know, it doesn't make any sense at all. But that's how it works. Because intelligence is a quality. Intelligence is an opulence. Therefore, people with it become proud. Just like anyone with beauty or fame or renunciation or power, they all become proud. So those with knowledge, they become proud of their knowledge. But the problem is it doesn't give rise to the others. Because you're going to attain, the Ananda aspect or the Aniruddha because of going through Pradyumna. In Sankarshan, it's just the knowledge of the position. Right? It's the Sambandha, it's just the knowledge of it. But it's not until you apply Abhideya that you get Prayojana, that you actually taste Ananda. You know? So for them, it's really nice to know. And that inspires them. And so for them, that's the highest happiness. And they think there's nothing higher. So that's the difficulty, is scholars will always think they can approach and understand the Supreme simply by knowledge.
Yes.
Just by the mechanics of knowledge,
yes,
that, you know, because they know how to use it. You know, it's just like anyone who knows anything, they think by that they can solve any problem.
Yes.
You know, so it's a set. So it's common, just like someone with strength thinks with strength he can do everything. Let's say someone's a psychologist. Through psychology, they'll fix everything. He's a physicist. Through that, they'll fix everything. So it's just this. They don't understand the supreme is all these opulences together, unlimitedly. So they're taking a portion and they're impressed by it, and naturally they should be because it's an opulence of the Lord, but they don't attribute it to the Lord because there's no bhakti. And so they can't actually understand the complete position. So it's a problem. Like that. So these same problems we'll say is, oh, but we don't deal with mayavadis. If you're dealing with the intellectuals on any level, you're dealing with mayavadis. Right? Because they think that by my academic intelligence I can understand everything. So they're thinking they can understand the absolute truth simply because of their intelligence and word juggling. Right? They're expert in grammar and everything like that. Like we saw in Brihad Bhagavatam, no, in Jaiva Dharma. Then Vaishnav Das comes to, he gets attracted by the association of devotees. He comes to Mayapur. And then getting the association of the devotees in Mayapur and in Godrum, then he takes up devotional service. So then he becomes established nicely in that, and then they one day then you have the Brahmins. I think which ones came? I don't remember if it was the ones from Navadvip or the ones from Shantipur. But in any case, some Brahmins came, and.
Lahiri Maharshi.
Lahiri, yes. So I don't remember where. Oh, I think he was from the other. Yeah, whatever. They came, and they wanted to argue, and you know, it's these Vaishnavs are getting too much. You know, they're establishing all these things that aren't important and all that. And so then they come and all that, and they want to have a discussion. So because it's a debate, and because it's a debate, that's not very interesting to the pure devotees. So the Babaji's aren't inclined. They will debate to establish the point, but since Vaishnav Das, he's from Varanasi, he was a Varanasi sannyasi, so therefore debate is what he did his whole life. So for him it'll just be, you know, it'll be easier. So they ask if he would kindly take care of it. And so then the first thing he does when these Brahmins come forward, because they're all Bengali, you know, they'll know Sanskrit and this and that, but they'll speak Bengali. Right? And they'll be able to, you know, quote shlokas and bring out a word here and there, and they know grammar, you know, they'll know grammar. But there's a difference between knowing, let's say, just because you know grammar, you don't know how to necessarily speak and use it. You know, it's just like, let's say, learning another language. You know, first thing you do is you learn the grammar and everything like that. But it doesn't mean you can speak the language. And in fact, there's possibility that you could even correct the grammar of a native speaker of the language, but you still can't speak. You know, it's just like you so many times, Indians, they learn the grammar because they come from a grammatic background. So then learning English grammar, it's like, you know, riding a tricycle or something. You know, so then they come, and then you'll be speaking English. They can't speak English, but they'll correct your grammar. It's really, really funny. You don't see it as much now because it's much more, I think because the television people can speak better. But back in the 90s and stuff like that, it was always very entertaining. So they all come. That'll be their platform, right? And so then, you know, they could use dictionaries and all this kind of stuff. So then Vaishnav Das, the first thing he asked them is, so, you know, are we discussing in Sanskrit? And right there, they all go, oh, okay, maybe we underestimated, you know, who we're talking to here. And they say, oh, no, no, we'll talk in Bengali. So right there, he's already basically thrown them off their game. Right? And then, okay, you'll talk in Bengali. And so then, you know, if you can speak Sanskrit, you can speak Bengali, right? Because it's 90% Sanskrit. It's just that all the endings that you would have in the Sanskrit grammar, generally in the colloquial languages, they only have one ending. So it's Sanskrit that's it's Prakriti is like children's Sanskrit, like that. That's basically what it is. Does that make sense? And then what they teach in university, that's like, even less.
What children speak to their friends.
Yeah, what children. Yes. Okay, so we got into that by something, establishing that, yes, so because they know grammar, because they can talk in Sanskrit, because they can argue, they know logic, they think now they can understand everything. And so they love to argue over words. And so then generally most can't deal on that level. But we see as our acharyas very comfortably can, especially Jiva Goswami. Means all the acharyas can, but Jiva Goswami, he specifically studied 20 years, the logic and all that in Varanasi. So then his understanding of grammar and logic is greater than anyone. You know, because when they say he's the best scholar, that's including Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, who's Brihaspati. You know, we have to remember that. So it's just what he knows, no one knows. So then he can go down and argue on the finest point. They have a word, he can break it down into syllables. They can, and then that syllable has, you know, three or four meanings. He can argue on each one of them. So there's no question that you can go further in debate than what he can take it. So there is no one who could argue with Jiva Goswami and win. Like that.
Krishna Chudamani is the guy.
Krishna Chudamani, okay. And they were from? Okay. Yeah, no, they're all smartas, that's the thing. So, see, you see, the sannyasis, they're just smartas who've taken sannyas. That is what Mayavadis are. They're from smarta backgrounds, because in the Mayavad, you can only those from the smarta Brahmin backgrounds can take sannyas. I mean, if you came from a Vaishnav Brahmin's, background, you know, they'd accept it, but, you know, you still have to be trained, you know, like that.
And apart from attachment to their own philosophy, they also find some rasa and gnana. That's why they continue with it so much.
Yes. There's always a taste in any of the dharma, artha, karma, moksha, anything you deal with, the intellectual platform, the emotional platform, the sensual, the physical, any of these, then there's always a taste in it. That's the point, is that when Krishna is doing something, there's a taste. But the point is that what are they attributing the taste to? Like, so let's say we have someone in Shantaras. So they work in the same field of this knowledge. Right? But that taste that they have in that, they attribute it to the person, Krishna. It's through that medium. Because there's a medium that it comes through. Like you have this flower. Right? You smell the flower, there's a fragrance. But fragrance is separate from the flower. Right? That's understood because they offer it to the deity, then they take it around and everybody smells it, and by the end it has no smell. Everyone smelled the smell out of it. You know? So that means it's not the flower, the fragrance is inherent to the earth. And it manifests through a flower. But earth can have a fragrance on its own. Like that. But you want a very specific flavor, then you'll get from the flower, but it all comes from the earth. So the point is that Ananda comes from Krishna. He's the Ananda Maya Purush. Nothing else is Ananda. Gyan is not Ananda, right? The senses are not Ananda. Does that make sense? It's the Lord is Ananda, and you can use the medium of knowledge. You can use the medium of fruit of activities. You know, to approach that Ananda. But the point is, unless you approach it as the Lord, then you won't really understand it. So that's why they'll be endeavoring for it, but at the same time saying Brahman doesn't have it. So if Brahman doesn't have it, where are they getting this Brahmananda from? You know, it's completely, it doesn't make any sense. So it's everyone's attached to whatever method that they're serving. So because Krishna's everything, everybody's worshiping Krishna, but because they don't attribute it to him, they don't get that benefit. They may get some sukha, but they don't get Ananda. Ananda's in connection with Krishna. Yeah? This indicates Brahman. Manifesting without particular qualities, it is designated as impersonal Brahman, or the tail, with the intention of saying that the Lord is superior to that with an endowment of Priya. Pramoda and Moda. Oh, this probably needs a comma there. It's superior to that with an endowment of Priya, Pramoda, and Moda. This Brahman without qualities is not the chief form. Right? Does that make sense? We need a quality after that.
When we say tail, I'm not sure. Yeah, seems that way. But tail, I think before it meant basis? Is that
it's the basis, it's the, means you can say it's the tail, it's the basis, it's the lower portion.
It was defined as foundation and
base. Yeah, foundation, any of that. But the word probably basically uses tail.
Right.
Like that. So that's why it's always, or in any in case, whoever it is translating is always using tail, because maybe that's the more generally used thing. But most likely it means foundation. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Is describing the as the form,
right?
So as the form, it goes to the tail, but it's like the basis.
Yeah, you say like that, but the point is the basis. They put on what it's established on. So they're trying to say is Brahman. Even if first they said the jiva, and then they'll say no, but Brahman is the foundation. But the point is it's not. It's the Purusha is, and so that's why the aspect of the tail. It's just part of the Purusha. It's not the main. The main is this aspect of Priya, Pramoda, and Moda. Did it say what Pramoda and Moda are?
These are all the degrees of happiness, ananda.
Pramoda and Moda are happiness.
These are all joy, increasing order of joy.
Joy. Joy and increasing joy. Yeah? Joy and more joy.
Secure joy.
Yes. Okay. So this. Yeah. So these aspects, those are superior, right? So the Lord Himself is superior to these qualities, and there is that basis of Brahman. But that basis of Brahman is like, yes, you walk around on the floor in your house. Does that now make the floor superior to you? You know, it's because you are there. There's a house that has a floor. That makes sense. It's not because you make a house with a floor, then suddenly people appear inside the house. Right? You know, that would be a real problem for contractors, right? They want to make a house and they want to sell the house, but as soon as they make it and put in the floor, then there's people walking around and saying, "This is our house." You know, and so every time it's a court case, every time it's, you know, like that. You know, there's lawyers that specialize in this, you know, so that's a, yeah. Sorry?
They would work it out. Without the floor or something.
Yeah, build the whole house, no floor. But then the problem is who you're going to sell it to, unless there's the people. So when you make the floor, then the people are there. Then the point is you have to catch them quick enough before they really realize what's going on. So it's
you make the right kind of floor so the people that come have money.
Ooh. Yeah. Okay.
It depends on the material.
Okay. Yeah. So if you put down linoleum, then you got a problem. If you put down like marble or granite, or especially if it's Italian or something. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. See? Yeah. They'll work good. Okay. This Brahman without qualities is not the chief form. Asan eva sa bhavati asad brahmeti veda chet. Asti brahmeti chet veda santam enam tato vidhu.
We read?
Oh, no. When it says 2-1, that's in the second part of the Anandavali. This is not mentioning the Vali. Because 6-1, there isn't six volleys. There's only four. So this is just later in the sections. The Anandavali has sections. The others don't have sections. They just have the verses. Taittiriya Upanishad 6.1. If one knows Brahman as non-existent, he becomes non-existent. If he knows Brahman as real, the wise know him as existing. Right. So, if you say Brahman doesn't exist, you don't exist. It means you're there, but, you know, yeah, it's like, you know, over in the corner there's a that piece of plastic is there. You know, it's kind of like, who cares? But if you understand Brahman as real, that substance, then you're known as actually existing. In other words, your position, your reality starts when you understand Brahman, the nature of Brahman. Taittiriya Upanishad 6.1. This verse refers to the Anandamaya Lord, since it refers to the chief form, and the chief form has qualities. In this statement, the Lord without qualities is not indicated. Since Brahman is described having qualities, using the words asti, meaning existing. Right? So then, if you understand the Anandamaya Purusha, then now that's actually where you're existing. Because even you get liberated by understanding Brahman only, you will come back into material existence. You will never leave the Mahatattva. Because without bhakti, you can't get liberated. Right? Does that make sense? So, final liberation means when you actually accept an Anandamaya Purusha as existent, that he is actually transcendence. Then you will attain that position. Right? Otherwise, before that, yes, they may have some understanding of Brahman, and they may get liberated from a specific universe. Right? They get out of the universe, and they don't have, as such, a gross material body. But they don't get out of the Mahatattva. They don't cross Viraja, because they can't get out of the material universe. Does that make sense? Yes, that because they're not going to get rid of that. That's why real liberation means taking up devotional, pure devotional service. Then when they attain the spiritual form there, there's no karana sharira. So they're actually liberated. When you're established in a relationship with the Lord, then that's real liberation. These others, it seems to be, but because it's within the material aspects of dharma, artha, kama, and moksha, that it's still within the Mahatattva. So they may not have a gross and subtle body, but they have the karana sharira, so like that, they sit around and think they are Brahman. You know, like that. But then as they mature, they become humbled. Like, yes. And become a blade of grass or rock. Like that.
Krishna described the universal form after description of the whole universal form. When it shows four-ended, then two-ended form. And after that, Krishna is saying, through study of Vedas, or through austerities, or through sacrifices, you can't know me. But you can only know me as I am standing in front of you, only by bhakti.
Yes, yes, very good. Yeah, because you can see all these other aspects. And in some touch of knowledge, you'll have an interest, you can learn something. Because then Krishna, it points, you can't know that either without devotion to the Lord. But in that case, since he is knowledge, by devotion to knowledge, he will reveal that aspect of himself that's connected with knowledge. Right? But himself as a person, he'll only reveal if that devotion is personal. Means eternally personal. Not like, you know, you see many people in their homes, they worship deities and all that, but ultimately they have ideas the Supreme is impersonal. So that's still not counted as bhakti. It's devotion to their religious process of following. Right? So they're following something. They're doing some deity worship, or they're studying the scriptures, they're doing some austerities. You know, they're following the varnashram duties. So because they're worshiping the Lord who is that, those religious duties, and having devotion to those religious duties, then Krishna reciprocates those duties. That's why you can't just choose anything you want, because devotion means it's already a set path. And so then those things that are useful in bhakti, those are what are religious principles. Right? And so then you have to be engaged in those religious principles, you know, with devotion to those religious principles to advance in those and get the benefit. Right? But now, since those are all just part of, you know, useful aspects for bhakti, then the point comes down is that without that devotion to the person, you know, following it, you know, coming in the parampara, you can't actually know the person. And if you do know, then the engagement of all those other religious processes have their natural form, their natural position. Right? It's just like, let's say, the gopis are going out to visit Krishna in the middle of the night. Is there no austerity there?
Yes.
Right? So, that's how austerity is used. Right? You know, when they talk about Krishna, do they not know something about the scriptures? Do they not know the Rasa Shastras? Do they not know music? Do they not know cooking? But they're just used to serve Krishna. Right? Does that make sense? Are the Brajbasis not performing their Varnashram duties? Right? They're cowherds. Why, you know, that's why Krishna goes out every day, to take the cows out. Why does Nanda Baba and the elders take taxes to Mathura? You know, so there's kings there. Does that make sense? You know, so everything, they're all following these things, but these are only of value in their service to Krishna. Right? Now, you can take Varnashram without Krishna. As long as you're devoted to the Varnashram, you'll appreciate so many things of Varnashram, and the Varnashram will go nicely for you. But it won't reveal Krishna. It'll only reveal that knowledge and practice of Varnashram, that is Krishna. But you don't see it as Krishna, so it remains the secondary. Right? Or Krishna's knowledge. So you study the scriptures, you spend the time, you use the appropriate times for it. You know, you do whatever is beneficial for knowledge. And so then Krishna reveals himself as knowledge. But you won't know the Supreme Person. Because that takes, you have to see it in devotion. So anything of glory in this world, the principle of it goes back to bhakti. That's all. It's all parts of that. But the thing is people aren't using it for devotion to Krishna. So they don't get the benefit of it being devotion to Krishna.
A question. Is it then that the religious principles increase your attraction to Krishna, so that then you start the development of the devotion to the person, and you start the feelings, the emotions towards Krishna?
The religious principles, they're tools. Mm-hmm. So, but they themselves don't produce bhakti. Bhakti comes from bhakti. Because otherwise you'll see, like in India, people who are very nicely following the scriptures and all that. When we talk about the Brahmins and the Smartas, there's hundreds of thousands of them, you know, like that, maybe even millions of them. And they follow like what we do for a daily schedule, you know, getting up in the morning, taking bath, you know, the Mangal Aarti, doing the pujas and all that, and Charinamrita and so, they do all that. So whatever, it's just a standard thing. So we'll take it that, oh, this is what Hare Krishnas do. No, this is what anyone who follows the Vedic culture does. Like that. But we do it all in connection with Krishna and devotion. So we don't see them becoming devotees. But it's the best situation in which to engage in devotional service. Just like, let's say we are sitting in the middle of, you know, Grand Central Terminal, right, at rush hour. It's not necessarily the best place for chanting your japa. You can chant, but it's not the best. But if we're situated in the temple and the deities are open, like that, you know, and it's, you know, peaceful and others are chanting, that's a very good situation. You understand? So in other words, religious principles are there to support, but they don't produce bhakti. So we're practicing these religious principles and religious activities because of our pursuit of bhakti. And so in bhakti you will do those. So we may not have the bhakti, but in pursuit of bhakti we're doing it. So therefore we move forward in bhakti. But for those who are just religious, they'll move forward in religion but not bhakti.
In other words, it is the goal, the intention of achievement of bhakti, that these religious principles support you and take you forward.
Yes, yes. They're secondary. You know, that's all. It's not that they're primary. They don't create it. That's why sometimes it's a misunderstanding to think that, yes, no, if the devotees develop nice qualities and all that, then devotional service will go nicer. It won't, because there's plenty of nice people that aren't devotees. You know, plenty of people with money, plenty of people with position, plenty of people with knowledge, authority. There's millions of them. And they're not devotees. So these things, you can engage in Krishna service, but they don't produce devotional service. You know, just like the flower doesn't produce devotional service. You take the flower and engage it in devotional service. So it's something that's nice to be engaged. So that's why the religious principles, as opposed to other things. Because they're the ones that are the natural forms of bhakti. Like using a flower to offer to Krishna, that's what you do in bhakti. And so then people, because they're nice and that, then people make flower arrangements and all this. Like there's, I think in Japan, flower arrangements is literally a 20-year course. It takes you 20 years to become a master in flower arrangements. Like that. But there's a good chance that all of those masters in flower arrangements in Japan, not one of them's a devotee. Right? But now if they came in contact with devotees and took up devotional service, then they have a very nice service. They can do so many wonderful things for Krishna. So that's why it's recommended, rather than, you know, you bring a cactus or something, you know, like that, an old shoe, right? You know, because the point is, as well, the flowers have fragrance, like that. Old shoes have fragrance also. So then can we offer, you know, the old shoe during Artik, you know, like that. So that's the whole thing, is one has to understand is that bhakti is the original natural activity of the interaction between the Lord and the devotees. And then that's reflected into the material world. Leaving out God, people take different parts of it. You know, it's just like, let's say, you make a meal, a full meal, right? And it has so many elements to it, right? And so the idea is they all go together. But then, you know, the kids come in and this one takes the sweet, that one takes the fried things, that one takes this, and everybody leaves the, you know, steamed vegetables. Right? And so they don't see it as one thing. They just take what they like. So that's the whole thing of the six opulences of all these religious practices. Different people take different ones and use it themselves for their own purposes. Does that make sense? So when it's seen in this way, then the whole thing becomes very dynamic, because now everything you can see connected to Krishna. But you're seeing it from the bhakti side, then everything connects. If you're seeing it from the mundane side and says, oh, everything can be connected to Krishna, then the point is that it's only the everything can be connected to Krishna if you connect it. But it, then it's taking, oh, everything can be connected, so therefore automatically if I'm using it, it's connected. But that doesn't work. It has to. That's why we use what's recommended. Because otherwise it's a good chance you won't. Like I remember seeing boys that come out, they put on their, you know, the peg shoes or this or that. They go out, you know, and it works very nicely. They don't even think twice about it. But I remember once we were in the West, I think in Hungary, and we had to go out for, we were going out for something. And one of the boys who had you know, graduated from the school, he was living there. And all that, and I think he was, you know, going to work or something, or whatever it is, something later. So it wasn't the devotional clothes. And so then he came, and he couldn't find the right shoes. So, you know, because somehow, you ever noticed in temples in the front part? There's five brahmacharis, but there's like 20 pairs of shoes. Like, you know, I don't know how it works, but whatever it is. So someone had taken the pair of shoes that matched the karmic clothes that he was wearing, how he wanted to wear it. And so he was freaking out. I mean, literally freaking out. He couldn't go with this. He's going a totally emotional mess because the shoes are missing. He wanted to wear the black ones, and all there was were the brown ones. You know? And he was totally freaking out. So that's the thing, is it becomes, the secondary becomes the total, and it doesn't matter. When it's just part of a major, something else, then it does, it, then it fits in naturally. That makes sense. So that's the difficulty, is that the living entity, when they don't see things connected to Krishna, they overemphasize things, and it becomes more important than it actually is. Like, let's say someone's into saving the trees. any conversation, no matter what you're talking about, they will bring up the trees. Literally. And it's the main thing in the conversation. If you're not agreeing with that, no other conversation could take place. No other activity can be done. You know, nothing. You know, in other words, the trees are the, what is it? The way, the light, and the truth. Yeah. It just becomes that. Or, you know, take anything else. Whatever's the modern thing, some political thing or this or that. It becomes everything. They can't see it in its balance where it goes. So that's the point. Bhakti, we don't notice it because nothing stands out except Krishna. So we'll think, oh, that's simple, that's easy. But that's the part that's not easy. Does that make sense? You know, talking on, just on the same, this, what do you call it? In the fashion thing, you ever heard of a term called sprezzatura? No? No? So sprezzatura, it means a very natural, casual elegance. They look really good, but it looks as if they made zero effort. They just threw some clothes on and it just worked. Does that make sense? So that's the point, is that most people won't even notice sprezzatura unless you're really, really refined in the fashion conscious. And then you'll see it. Because then you can see how refined everything perfectly matches. There's nothing out of place, but at the same time, it's just so natural. You have a word in French for that? No? No? Okay. There's so many words. Which one would be the appropriate one?
Interpolation.
Okay. Yeah, something. It means everybody can understand it. It's just that the Italians, somehow or other, they have a word for it. You know, it's like you take a piece of flat bread and put some stuff on top, you know, like that. You know, everybody else makes bread and puts stuff on top. Everybody does that. But they call it a pizza, and that's world famous. But every community does it. So whatever. So then that's the whole thing, is bhakti is like that. It's just so perfect and so natural that you don't think that it's, you know, in any endeavor. So, oh, that can be. But so that's why the gyan, no, but with all this knowledge, I can do this and that. No, with all my knowledge and skills, I can do all this. So the karmis and gyanis think we're in a superior position than the devotees. Because for the devotees, it's just so natural. Yes.
In the Bhagavad Gita, they said that they are the banyan tree.
Right.
So, is it on the banyan tree if we take another way than Krishna consciousness, or are they?
Means the banyan tree. How is this banyan tree? What's its situation? How is it? How is it situated?
Of the spiritual world.
Yes. So it's upside down, right? So now, if you're moving towards the roots, then you're moving towards the spiritual world. Right, the root means the basis on why it's all happening. But now most people, if you have a tree, they go for the leaves, the flowers, the fruits, which is the opposite direction. You understand? So that's the problem, is that they go for the externals. You know, it's just like, let's say, I use the example sometimes, someone somehow or another got attracted by skiing. You know, people are skiing, he thinks, yeah, I want to do that. And he's got some money, so he'll go down to the ski shop, he'll find out, okay, what do you need to ski? You know, he'll have already done his research, this, that, what's the best, the absolute top, and he'll buy all the best equipment, all the best everything like that. Then he'll go, where's the best, ski resort? He'll go there, and he'll do all the right things, everything the best. But when he gets there, even though he's got the best stuff, he's at the best resort, everybody at the resort knows he's completely new and knows nothing. Right, you understand? Because they're taking it that these are the things that make it, but it's not. It's the ability to ski. You know, amazing. But you know, no. But you can't ski without these. No, they've been skiing without those for a lot longer. You know, this latest thing in carbon fiber came. They've been skiing on wood for the last 1,000 years. So, yeah. And the fun part is the carbon fiber doesn't help you, doesn't avoid rocks and trees for you. You still have to do that yourself. Does that make some sense? So the difficulty comes up is that the secondary is taken as the primary. So here the jnanis, they take the logic and the argument and all these different things and getting negating Brahman. You know, so they're using their intelligence to negate Brahman. I mean, negate the material and end up with Brahman. So Brahman is just what's left when you've negated everything. So it's not necessarily that it's... They're taking it, oh, but it's knowledge and going through. It's an upliftment. Yes, the Vedas are saying it is. But it's negating the material consciousness and accepting the spiritual consciousness. That's the actual thing. But they're just getting rid of everything in the material world, and what's left over, that's Brahman. So...
At what level of consciousness does Mayavadi are?
At Vijnanamaya.
Real Mayavadi.
Yeah, Vijnanamaya. It means they understand they're not the body, they're the soul. The sadhaka, the devotees who are sadhakas, means like what our position, yeah. We're also situated in that place.
Yeah.
So it's above religion, you know, being done for fruit of activities. We're doing practicing religious principles, understanding the nature of the soul, and trying to do it for bhakti.
Yeah.
So ours, we're moving up so dynamically because of that. So that's the point. Wherever you start, anamoy, pranamoy, wherever, then you're situated in vijnanamoy as a sadhaka. You know, and then when you're absorbed in Krishna, that's on the Anandamaya platform.
Yes.
And then, you know, we'll, you know, in other words, we fall down from that Anandamaya position, it'll be down to Vijnanamaya.
Yes.
You know, it's just you go there. And then as you become situated, then you become established there. So basically, when you're on the platform of Bhava, that's then you're on the Anandamaya platform. But now you're just situated there, that this is, you're on, the Sat aspect is established. So that's why it's called, it's real, it's you could say, real liberation compared to the other. The other, it's sat, but they don't even know anything more. So they're not really situated there, because they're not, it's not connected to the person. So then they'll take up the practices, you know, in the association of the eternal associates. Like that, that'll bring them to the activities, you know, the chit aspect, and that'll bring them to prema, the ananda aspect. Does that make sense? So then you can say, as someone on the platform of prema, that's real liberation. Because they'll never fall from that platform. So then you're trying to get through to that. So they're just becoming distracted by playing with knowledge. And with an idea that from this knowledge, because they're not going to use this knowledge to get a good job, because they've already tried that and were frustrated. You know, it's just like I mentioned, I met in Finland, one of the persons who was the, what do you call it? You know, the person who, like an MC, like that, they introduce people and, you know, come in between, yeah, so now this one will speak and this and that, and oh, that was really nice, so they ask a question, you know, they try to make the thing dynamic. So, it's one guy, young guy, you know, nice suit, everything, looked really, really good. And that, and he saw, you know, I was sitting behind him, and then he started talking, you know, in between when he's going. Then he was saying that he had, he was a corporate professional. And he was working in the field, and must have been doing very well, otherwise why would they have him as the speaker? Right? But the problem was that after a while, he just burnt out, because, you know, what is actually there for the living entity? You know, on the material platform, you just say, oh, that's weakness. But in actuality, it's just, he's smarter. So he figured out, I've done all this. It's supposed to be when you have the position, you have these things, you have the money, then you're going to be happy. And he found he wasn't happy. So then he stepped back a bit, and he got into Buddhist meditation. Right? And from that, then he's peaceful and that. So, you know, he doesn't even turn on his phone until a certain time after he's done all his, you know, sadhana and this and that. And then he'll, you know, he'll do all these kind of things, because he sees without being peaceful, you can't function. Not in a stable way. Right? You can go really fast and burn out at both ends and, you know, candle at both ends like that. But he can just see now he can be stable in the corporate world and do, you know, do well. So that's the thing, is they've taken up this, then they understand they can apply it. But so they've taken it more, so they can't, you know, he's still able to deal in the corporate world. But if you're more understanding, you'll know that it doesn't give you anything at all.
Yes.
So that's the position of these Mayavadi sannyasis, the Buddhist monks, like that, is they've just given up on it. So there's no joy in the knowledge being used for, you know, dharma, artha, and kama.
Mm-hmm.
So it's only used for moksha. So therefore, they're enamored by all the jnana and the grammar and everything. You know, a clever, oh wow, that's a very clever... You know, someone comes, Shankaracharya gives very clever ways to deal with it, and they're very enamored by that. But Jiva Goswami then points out in a very natural way, no. You know, it's just like he says, they say this, and he says, then Jiva Goswami says, it's not so. You know, says, it's not like that. Then he'll explain it. More technically than their presentation. So that's something. It always, yeah. So in other words, since they are working in gyan, they respect gyan. Therefore, you overwhelm them with greater gyan. Then they start to, you know, listen. It's like dealing with teenagers. They think they're so smart and so clever. So if you act and deal more cleverly than them, they'll respect you. That's all. Just that.
So, yeah. Madhvacharya's guru, he's by attitude he is like very humble and all, but he had that inclination towards Shankaracharya's Sharirika was.
Yeah.
Even after many years, even if after he saw Madhvacharya, he was not. His opinion was still like, oh, there is no commentary better than the Sharirika was here. Finally, after many years, after Madhvacharya wrote so many literatures and preached and came, took him along, and finally
he got it. Okay.
And then he puts all those.
Then he put the brands. Okay.
Till then he did. Finally, when he understood that,
yeah, it just took a little while. That's Goshti Purna.
And that is Achyuta Preksha.
Achyuta Preksha. Okay.
This Purna is they are all
Goshti Purna
Shri Vaishnava.
Oh, that's Shri Vaishnava. Okay. Yeah, after a while, all the stories kind of merge. Yes.
For the Mayavadis, Maharaj, it seems that there is no such thing as practical knowledge, practical application of knowledge, because the world is so illusion. So.
Yeah.
So as you said, the only thing that keeps them going is like world jewelry and speculation.
Yes. Like the sannyasis were complaining to Lord Chaitanya, why you're not studying Vedanta? Because they don't have anything else.
It's very dry.
Yes, very dry.
Very dry,
but they get used to dry. You know, it's like some people like living in Arizona, you know, so it's you know, they get used to it. Yes.
Bhagavatam says that one who is a devotee as automatically has all the good qualities of demigods. But one who is not a devotee is just working on the chariot of mind. So all the time is changing.
Yes, yes. It'll always be changing. And so what good qualities are manifesting, that's just a matter of previous karma. And they have some now, that's good. But it's only if when they take devotional service, then they're real. If one claims that existence of the conscious beings means simply knowledge or awareness and nothing else, because they're always trying to bring it back to it's just knowledge or awareness. But the point is that if it's awareness, awareness has to be applied on something, on an object, to say you're aware. If there's no object, how can you say you're aware? So that's the problem. They'll attribute knowledge and... knowledge means there's an object that you know. Awareness means there's an object you're aware of, but the point is if there's only Brahman, there's no object to direct that towards. Right? It means like if you're in a empty room, you know, and it's just either all light or all dark, and there's nothing you can perceive. You can't say you can apply knowledge or that you're aware. Right? Does that make sense? You can say, no, I'm aware of that, but then you're aware of just the emptiness there, or you're aware of the darkness, or aware of, you know, something. You have to have an object. So it doesn't make sense even that they're saying these things, but they'll always say it. That's just, they have to. Even that finally amounts to admission of qualities of Brahman. Having described each Purusha, each section concludes with statements like, from food the living beings arose. Thus, the Lord of Brahman is not simply the tail, but the Anamaya and other Purushas as well. Thus, even Anam indicates the Anandamaya Purusha. Right? So we'll see that in the next section, in the Bhrigavali of Taittiriya Upanishad, because they've described it here. Then he goes through all the levels, and then his final point is that I am Anna. You know, like that, is that we are made from this and everything. So we're made, it means we're simply made, everything's from the Lord. And so then they have that connection to the Lord. But, that's Upanishadic. Bit esoteric, but that's how it works. In sutras like the following, it is indicated that the Anandamaya Purusha cannot be a jiva. Netaro nupapattehe. The jiva is not the subject of the mantra, because that is impossible by the context. Wow. It starts starting about the Anandamaya Purusha right in the beginning. After the first few verses establishing Brahman, establishing the Shastra, and establishing like this, then it's just going right into the Anandamaya Purusha. All of this proves, because it said that first, there is everything's established in there, and then everything, the whole rest of the Vedanta Sutra is just expanding on that. All of this proves that the Supreme Lord is the Anandamaya Purush. What more need be said? Like, so many technical points. If the author of the sutras desired to reveal the secret to the persons who are ignorant of Vedanta, and were to use grammatical tricks to remove their inattention, he would explain Anandamaya in another way. In the sutra, Anandamaya would refer to the tail, which is Brahman. Impersonal Brahman would be considered the main element. Yeah, so if you use grammatical tricks and all that to take their focus off of the Anandamaya Purush, mm-hmm. by grammar, then they focus on Brahman, and then they reverse it. So that's the... Vikara shabdan neti chen na prachuryat. If one argues that the suffix maya means transformation, that is not correct, since the suffix means inherent abundance. Brahma Sutra 1.1.13. Wow, this is so far up. It's all right here in the first one. In the above sutra, the word vikara would be taken to mean limbs, and prachura would mean Brahman. If one proposes that the Lord has limbs, the answer is no, since the word maya equates Ananda with Brahman. So is this, are we continuing ourselves, or is this reversing it here?
We are continuing
ourselves. Okay. The author would thus not be conversant with the meaning of words, since he attempts to describe Brahman, which cannot be described using words. Even a child would not give other meanings to the affix maya and the words transformation and abundant when they are constantly mentioned in the text. Okay, so even children use it how it's normally used. They wouldn't take it and give some other meaning just to get something done. You know, unless it's to get a cookie out of the cookie jar. Then so much, you know, logic and argument comes up. Yes. It is said, Alpak Sharam Asan Dignam Saravad Vishvato Mukam Astobhyam Ana Vadyam Sa Sutram Sutra Vidho Viduhu. A sutra expresses the essence of all knowledge in a minimum of words without ambiguity. Right, so this whole point of the indirect, but that's not the meaning of sutra. It should be without repetition and faultless. Right, so you don't say things over and over again, you just say it that one time. Like that. Vayu Purana and Skanda Purana. To take the head, called Priya, to be the prominent topic would also make the sutra meaningless. This would give it a material meaning in relation to the material body rather than the knowledge related to Brahman. Therefore, Anandamaya refers to the supreme Brahman, and Priya, Pramoda, and Moda are its adjectives. They are the qualities of Parabrahman's manifestation. Right, so therefore, then you see Priya, Pramoda, Moda, and then Brahman also, or the tail, is also just part of it. So the supreme Brahman, the person, is the actual subject, and all these are describing the person. There is variety within the Lord. So that's the thing, is then as soon as you say that, then again they want to make the oneness, so they'll say, oh, all these qualities, you can't have qualities on the supreme. So then you have to go back to that argument again. that to take okay, there's variety within the Lord, right? Within an object, its surup, there's variety. By not accepting the qualities within Brahman, there's a contradiction to statements saying the qualities appear within Brahman. Etasyaivanandasyananyani bhutani matram upajivati jivanti. The living entities live because of the Lord, full of bliss. Taittiriya Upanishad 3.3.32. Vriti. Having thoroughly established that the scriptural statements of Brahman having qualities can't be figurative. Next, Srila Jiva Goswami describes how the Supreme Lord is devoid of any material upadis or qualities, but he possesses his own spiritual qualities. Statements describing an all-pervading entity with no limbs simply mean that the Lord is devoid of material limbs. The word nirupadhi, without designation, means that by his nature the Lord reveals his bliss unlimitedly. The word sandohaha, abundance, is used in the 11th canto. Kevalanu bhavananda sandoho nirupadikaha. The Lord remained in the form of complete bliss without maya. Srimad Bhagavatam 11.9.18. So here you see is that without maya means that external, the illusory aspect. Because it says if he's in complete bliss, that means there must be sufficient volumes of it. So maya is not being used in that way.
Yes.
It is suitable that the Lord does not have material limbs, since he is indestructible. Right? And material means it's destructible. The sutras Janmadyasya Yataha and Shrutatvachcha, Brahma Sutra 112 and 112, should be explained in the same manner. Ramanujacharya says, one should understand that the philosophy of impersonal Brahman, which is consciousness only, is refuted by the author of the sutras through these Shruti statements. Brahman, endowed with qualities like spiritual glancing and witnessing, is the object of inquiry. Gaunas chen natma shabdat. If you argue that Brahman described by words is Brahman covered by material gunas, the answer is no, because the text mentions the word atma in relation to Brahman. Brahma Sutra 116. It's like all these verses, I mean so many of these verses, these one at least Taittiriya and the Vedanta Sutra, the early ones in the first chapter. The boys learned all those. Mm-hmm. But the funny part is when it's not with all the swaras and how it's broken up there, I don't know it. Mm-hmm. You know, this I'm saying gaunas chen natma shabdat, but you know, but in the thing, gaunas chen natma shabdat, but without that I don't know it. So the Taittiriya Upanishad is the same. I'm reading it, it says, where is this? You know? But then if we're chanting it, then you can it's really fun. If you argue that Brahman described by words is Brahman covered by material gunas, the answer is no, because the text mentions the word Atma in relation to Brahman, Brahma Sutra 116. On the other hand, the impersonalists say that descriptions of the Lord as a witness are material descriptions, right? Because they'll say that him witnessing or this, in other words, as soon as you have an object, then that means there's two, so it can't be non-differentiated. So then where you would apply one, they apply two. Where you apply two, they apply one. They always have it backwards because they're based in the mode of ignorance. The Ajnana Shakti then bewilders them. Right? They may be situated personally in their lifestyle in the mode of material goodness, but they don't have the pure goodness. And so then even though they're there, they're under the control of Ajnana Shakti. So their conclusions will always be backwards. They'll always be wrong. Religiously, they may follow things something right, but generally you see spiritually they get it all wrong.
It was said in the beginning of the page that philosophy of impersonal Brahman is consciousness only.
That's what they're saying. What should I say, which is consciousness only, is refuted by the author of the sutras, the Sruti statements.
And what is the meaning of only consciousness?
They're trying to say is all Brahman is just consciousness. But the point is consciousness means that you're conscious of something. There's an object.
Yes.
So then, by their definition, Brahman can't be just consciousness. Brahman can be nothingness.
Yes.
But it can't be consciousness or knowledge. And that's why at the end they say, well, ultimately you can't actually even say it's knowledge or consciousness. They'll even throw that out, because that's then where, at that point, the philosophy, you know, has come, you know, removed so much of the material aspects, you know, the general thing that it becomes very, you know, that they're right at the edge of the maximum of how far they can take their philosophy.
Yes.
So we see is that it's the layer is very thin, you know, it's like the snake skin.
Yes.
You know, you can see right through it, though you can see something's there. And so, because what's on the other side is Buddhism. It's just voidism. You know, so they go up to that little bit that can kind of tell. But at that point, that they ultimately have to throw out everything, and it's just Buddhism. You know, so it's, unfortunately, so up to that, depending on where you start, it'll be more common. The closer it is down to the material world, the more common it is. And then the higher it gets, the more it starts to not be in line. Until it ends up as Buddhism. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So in other words, you're going for pure Buddhism, and then you have the Vedic. And so then as the Buddhist comes down into the philosophy, that's where it's wrong. As it switches over and it's just the Vedic, that's where it'll be correct.
Mm.
Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. On the other hand, the impersonalists say that the descriptions of the Lord as a witness are material descriptions. The author promises, however, that one can know Brahman through Vedanta by inquiry. The sutras establish that Brahman is a conscious entity. Ikshatir na shabdam. Brahman is not inexpressible because scriptural statements to the contrary are seen in the Upanishads stating that the Lord glances. Brahma Sutra 115. Yeah. The Lord is endowed with the quality of consciousness. Without such glancing or consciousness, he would be equivalent to matter. Sri Bhāṣya 112. So he's showing that those qualities are there.
Yes.
But we have this tendency. They want to say there's no qualities because
yes.
they don't understand there's no material qualities.
Yes.
There's only, but they're spiritual. So that they're not accepting that, so that's the problem. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Premanandi.
Now we have a review of Vedanta Sutra.
Yes, we do.
You cannot escape.
Cannot escape, yes.
It's interesting, Mayavadist and more Vedanta Sutra exact has to be quoted. The last adhyaya of this of Bhagavad Sandarbha, again we come across similar things. But there it's only to refute the Brahmavadis, whether Brahman is superior or Bhagavan.
Okay, so once you've gotten rid of the Maya bodies, then it's just a matter of the three levels of realization.
Which is superior.
Okay.
And there they use the Kumara's realization.
Okay.